Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves and today we're welcoming back an old friend. As always, I'm joined by my co-host and the man who's been priding himself on his lack of pride, Mark McMahon.
Look at that.
Like, he's grinning like E.T. over there in the corner, folks. But much more importantly, we're delighted to be rejoined in the Tortoise Shack by a warrior for the long road, tireless activist, and a very, very damn decent person, Izzy Kamikaze. Izzy, thank you so much for coming back.
I was wondering who you were talking about there.
Yeah.
I didn't recognise anybody from that description.
You know,
definitely wasn't Martin.
Well, thanks for coming back, Izzy. And thanks so much for that. I don't have to sit at your feet today. I have a chair to myself.
I thought I'd let you sit in the chair. I was going to sit on your knee, but we'll save it for later, maybe.
it's really great that you decided to rejoin us here, because we both had our first kind of pride experience. Well, my first pride experience was this weekend. Martin ran to the front of the parade because, you know, that's Martin. And I think I said to you on the phone when we talked about it, I said I kind of hid away going, oh God, I felt like fraud, I think was
an interloper.
Yeah, an interloper. An interloper is a perfect way of putting it. But You went into Smithfield and you made a bit of an impromptu speech. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, pretty much. What happened this year, and I think, you know, fair play to the organisers of this year for doing it, but they decided that they wanted to acknowledge the people who originally, there was three groups actually, I think. There was the people who founded Dublin Pride. There were the people who worked on the law reform piece of work. And then there was a slightly earlier group of activists from the 70s. Yeah.
Mm.
So they wanted to get these sort of three groups on stage and just give them a moment's acknowledgement or recognition. And I was invited on that basis. So that basically meant I had to access to the stage.
Cut the mics.
Which normally I wouldn't have. So, because I am a founder of Dublin Pride. So, and it was irresistible because I'm at the time in life now when, a reunion opportunity with your old friends and comrades is hard to turn up.
You know?
I haven't gone to Dublin Pride the last few years for a few reasons. One of them being, the corporatization is kind of difficult for me, of something that is very much in my heart, a community thing. And the other one is just that it's so big that you don't meet anybody. You go out thinking you're going to meet all your old friends and you don't. So this invitation meant, oh yeah, okay, I can go and some of them will be there too and we'll meet. And I got the wristband that got me into the stage area. So when I was there, I had marched with them. There were actually two separate radical blocks in this year's parade, both of which I had marched with. I had spread myself around a bit during the parade. So I found it very heartening to see the numbers and the interest and the fact that that's happening at all. So I kind of felt that those people needed to hear their angle represented from the stage. And as I said, I had access to the stage. So I blagged my way in. I promised,
no better woman.
Yeah. I promised them 2 to 3 minutes. I probably did 5 minutes. But, you know, I mean, everybody promised them 2 to 3 minutes and some of them did 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So
at least they didn't pay the band to play you out.
They didn't have to get the shepherds. Or whatever the equivalent is to haul me off. I did try to keep it fairly short. Of course, there were things I would have loved to say that there just wasn't time to say, but I just thought it's a moment. It's a little sort of symbolic moment. And I think it's good. You know, I think all of the people, if you look at the people who founded any of that stuff, actually, you know, I mean, we didn't all have the same politics by any means. And there were definite disputes always and factions. But, you know, in the 70s and 80s and even the 90s, being out was fairly radical in itself and fairly kind of isolating. So the activist group would have been probably more radical than a lot of the people who are doing the same stuff now. So, yeah, I just thought it was nice to acknowledge the radicals who are coming together, forming their own blocks within the thing, expressing their own point of view, and to establish a connection between that and the roots and the history of Pride. So that was,
it was also great to see the cross party or the cross lines people who were there. I mean, I met Simon Harris, Mary Lou, I met Pascal Donoghue, who was there with his daughter.
Is the mayor, is he just name dropping now?
But
20 years ago, that wasn't there. And
it's a terrible shame you haven't got a camera for my horrified isn't that lovely?
But it's nice to see that there isn't the same.
Listen, it's really important to get those people out.
It is important.
Right? You have to get them out. There has to be an open door for everybody. I said to you earlier, you know, if Martin McGuinness could shake hands with Ian Paisley and vice versa, you know.
Become the Chuckle Brothers.
Yeah, there are times when.
You have to bury the hatchet and you have to say, let's
be. I don't know if you have to bury it permanently.
No, well, it's for the time.
Put it down for a day.
Yeah, I think there are symbolic moments. Yes. I think there are moments where you go, okay, you know, I mean, for me, it's a long time now since I was involved in organising that kind of stuff. But when you every so often you would get somebody along whose participation was important politically, let's say. You have to accept that, you know, for that one day, they are there signed up to your agenda.
Yes.
Right? The power relation is different.
Mm.
So you have to be gracious and hospitable. In that moment,
yes, I agree.
Normal hostilities can resume in the morning.
Yes.
but for that moment, it's a symbolic moment and it's important to people.
Now, I know Tony was quite miffed at one banner.
I was upset about a few things purely because, but it's not my place to be upset and I know that, but what there was that element where I saw the t-shirts on the Central Bank of Ireland said celebrating 75 years of the Central Bank. And the 75 was coloured into the rainbow as if that, you know, we talk about appropriating a thing. But it was literally, but the logo was to celebrate the Central Bank. And I thought how inappropriate that was. And I just thought that, okay, I was very fucking annoyed, you know?
The reality is that participation in, a kind of showcase event like Dublin Pride is a very cheap way for corporations to promote a particular image of themselves. It's a marketing exercise. And they can promote an image of themselves as inclusive, egalitarian, and so on at an extremely low cost. And there isn't necessarily any substance to it. And there really isn't any way of verifying whether there's any substance to it. You know, an organisation like Dublin Pride, in fairness to them, they don't have the resources to vet everybody who applies to be part of the parade. I'd like to talk about that actually in a minute, because I am very sympathetic to the people who organise it. I was involved in organising it in a different era, but actually the exact same questions, the exact same moral questions come up, even though the scale is different. Yeah. But I do think that as the years have advanced, the corporations have seen the benefit. It's a neoliberal thing. There are certain things that they can sort of sign up to that don't really cost anything, that don't really affect the bottom line. And they're very good at signing up to those things and not the other stuff. And of course, it's a huge aggravation, because what people who are outside of it forget, I mean, I think a large number of people in the LGBT community find this very aggravating, find this participation very aggravating. I get very annoyed with, there's a kind of person on Twitter who kind of thinks all gay people are neoliberals or something. You know what I mean? You know the kind of thing that I mean, that we're all signed up because these people are there. LGBT people are still considerably more likely than the population at large to be unemployed. Young LGBT people are considerably more likely to be homeless still, to be thrown out by their families. Trans people in particular are likely to have these kind of difficulties. There's a recent survey the unemployment rate in the trans community is 50%, which is, you know, vastly in excess of...
It's more than twice,
of any other section of the population, really. So, you know, it would be... there's huge homelessness. There is a lot of harassment, violence, discrimination in the provision of goods and services. Still, there's a lot of discrimination in the workplace. Mm. Still, all of these things still happen. So, you know, these institutions are not our friends, and a large percentage of the LGBT population is aware that they are not our friends, and it is an aggravation for people. It's a balancing act from the point of view of the people who are organising it, right? The alternatives, realistically speaking, you know, there are now tens of thousands of people, for whatever reason, that might be something we get back into later, because it's not all LGBT people anymore, but there are tens of thousands of people who want to take part in Dublin Pride. And the people who are organising it, who are a voluntary committee from the community, often quite young people, not necessarily particularly experienced in some areas, and they are responsible for the safety of those people. There's a whole lot of stuff that has to be done to facilitate the safety and the comfort of those people, and it costs money.
Absolutely.
Now, you have to get that money from somewhere.
Yes.
Now, a lot of the same people who would be, I'm talking now about people outside the LGBT community, the people who would be looking, and they would be using the corporate presence as a stick to beat the LGBT community with, because they really don't like the LGBT community.
Yeah. Just a thin veil to
those very same people. What is the alternative? The alternative is funding from the public purse for that event. That's what I would like to see.
Mm.
Yeah. Then you wouldn't need that sponsorship. But I guarantee you the very same people who go, oh, look at how, you know, capitalist identified all the queers are because they have, you know, Sky.
Sky or Tesco or whatever it is.
Or the Smirnoff or whoever it is at the head of the parade. Those very same people would be outraged. They'd be going, my child needs a kidney and the money is getting given to the queers. You know,
And you're absolutely right to point out the paradox and the crux of that. And you can't judge people for actually, like, we talk about Christmas. It won't be long now before we hit the Christmas shop opens in Brown Thomas and someone will write the first article about it.
Yes.
So we'd be loath to say that, you know, do we go back to the Christian or Catholic community and say, oh, did you sell out because Brown Thomas have a Christmas shop open in September? Mm. We don't do that.
No,
okay?
There's a lot of willingness to throw mud still at the LGBT community. You know, there's
absolutely.
No,
well, we saw there was violence only recently, and a poor young man had.
There's violence all the time.
Yeah.
Every survey that has ever been done of LGBT people, you know, you will not find an out LGBT person who has not suffered violence at some point in their life. Yeah. So I mean, that's real, and that's there. And it's a big deal to be responsible for those people's safety. I was responsible for the safety of people on that parade for quite a number of years. That was my role, in which capacity I had to liaise with the Gardaí and so on, which again was maybe not my favoured position, but you're very aware there is a potential for an attack on that parade.
Yes.
You know, you're gathering a lot of people together at events right through the week. In fact, much less high profile events. There's a lot of smaller events in the week running up to it. And people are coming together at those events. They're very high spirited events. People are having a few drinks. They're leaving with their guard down. You know, maybe they're holding hands with their partner. Maybe they're holding hands with someone else's partner. Who knows? But, you know, they're leaving and the guard is down, and there are incidents, there are violent incidents continually. People get hurt, and you have a responsibility for those people's safety, and it's a balancing act, yeah? So, you know, I think, for me, and I'm aware everybody's boundaries are a bit different about this, for me, it's gone way too far over to the corporatist side. In terms of what needs to happen about that, that's a bigger conversation, and it's a conversation that needs to happen within the LGBT community,
yeah,
really.
Yeah.
And I see things like the radical blocs that have developed over the last couple of years as a, an important start.
The radical feminists and the radical queer groups that some of them sprung up out of even the repeal movement, and they decided to kick in here in March.
Well, you know, it's not even that, because it's kind of a two-way relationship. Mm. You know, the people who were working for repeal were doing other stuff before they were working for repeal.
No doubt about it.
So, you know, that's a kind of a cross-fertilization that's going on all the time anyway. But yeah, I think there are bigger conversations that need to happen about it. I have a couple of suggestions, by the way, simple things just for people who do find it a bit difficult, right? If you want to celebrate LGBT pride and you're put off by the corporatist element in Dublin Pride, one very simple, very basic thing you can do is, there are now, I think, about 7 different towns and cities around Ireland that celebrate LGBT Pride. I was involved for 10 years. More recently than I was involved in Dublin Pride, I was one of the founders of Northwest Pride in Sligo and was involved in that for 10 years. We used to have maybe 150, 200 people. A large number of those, because it's still difficult in Sligo or Leitrim or Longford or Roscommon to be public about your sexuality or your gender identity. What made it possible, maybe a quarter of the people who participated were locals.
Yeah.
And what made it possible for them to do so and to do so in safety was that there were people who travelled from other parts of the country as well to be there. And they travelled for the fact that it was a community pride, that it was a very community-oriented event, very grassroots, cheap. You know, we had subsidised accommodation. We had subsidised events. Like, nothing cost. I don't think we ever had a ticket price that was more than 12 or 13 quid, you know. That was the way we run it, because again, if you're LGBT and up in one of the economically deprived parts of the country, you're even less likely to be able to afford the kind of extravaganza that we've seen in Dublin this weekend. Mm. So, you know, there's pride in Belfast, there's pride in Derry, there's pride in Cork, there's pride in Galway, there's pride in Sligo, pride in Limerick. These things are happening all around the country. You know, put your money where your mouth is, because it's not about money.
No,
but your presence.
Put your solidarity and your participation.
If you want to put your feet on the street, put your feet on the street somewhere where they're needed and where you will get that community spirit that you're looking for. So that's one way. And that also has a knock-on effect in Dublin, because it establishes that there is a demand for that kind of event. So there are various ways that it could go in the future. I think you could get a resurgence. You could get a community-based event separate from the other event that would happen in Dublin. That's one thing that might happen. You might get some kind of restriction on the corporates. You know, I mean, even back in my day, we did get requests for sponsorship. And we wouldn't have been getting as many of them at the time. But, you know, we had some kind of rules about it. Like, nobody got above the line sponsorship on anything.
It took a long time to get some sponsorship.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I don't know. A lot of it is very, very recent.
Yeah.
That's why I'm amused by the central bank in 75 years. 75 years in the central bank. 72 homophobic years.
Oh, no. Allegedly.
Allegedly. Whatever. You know, certainly any claim to inclusivity that a lot of these organisations would have is very recent, you know.
It's tenuous at best.
The first Pride events in Ireland happened 35 years ago. I was there. The little speech that I made, some people might have seen it online.
Yeah.
But it was...
The Irish Times covered it?
The Irish Times covered it, yeah. To my astonishment. I'm the new Nicholas Bell.
Nicholas Bell. We're going to do a glossary of all LGBT.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. But what I was just trying to get across very simply, in that I don't know how successful I was, but you know, all of those organisations, or practically all of those big corporations, they existed then. They were around then. They weren't doing anything for us, okay? They didn't fight for our rights, and they never will. Mm. I think you'll see it in America, right as we speak. Like a lot of those corporations are American or they're multinational, but they have an American base, and they have sponsored this kind of activity in the States. That's where the pattern comes from. I think you're going to see them distancing themselves pretty quick now in a political environment where that is not to their advantage.
Sadly, they're marching backwards in some of these hard fought freedoms are, if not being rolled back in legislation,
money will go back too. Mm. I don't think they will see it as being to their benefit to be signed up to these. I think when those rights we've seen, like they're going. You know, Trump is going to appoint a new Supreme Court justice,
and that's a huge concern. Yeah.
And they're going after
Roe versus Wade,
and undoubtedly they will go after same sex marriage. They will probably rule the bathroom bills constitutional. All of this kind of stuff is going to happen, and I think you know the big corporations, they never fought for anybody's rights, so I think they're going to go. You know, when the LGBT community is under fire, they're going to be nowhere to be seen. So I think what it's important to say to people is, you know, whatever rights we have because we fought for them.
Mm.
You know, we didn't get handed them. We didn't get handed them by the sort of neoliberal political parties, no matter what some conspiracy theorists would like you to think. We didn't get handed them by the big corporations, anything else. People got their hands dirty, you know?
Yeah.
People fought for it. And what I made reference, and I don't think it's hyperbolic to make reference to 1930s Germany in my little speech, that, you know, in the 1930s in Germany, you had large numbers of gay people and trans people were coming there from all over Europe because that was where you could be free.
Mm. Yes.
You know, and 10 years later, you know, people were in concentration camps in the same country. The pendulum swings in both directions, you know? So what you're not prepared to fight for, you lose. And we have fought for everything that we have.
Mm.
You know, a lot of people who only tuned in relatively recently kind of see.
Stop looking at me. Yeah.
well, how long? You're woke 10 months now.
10 months woke now at this stage. Yeah.
Well, I'm really looking forward to your woke anniversary.
Well, it took you 35 years to be an overnight success. Like, that was a very successful parade. It was a very successful parade in that. It what I met was lots of young people, particularly from across the border up north, and they are fighting battles that were fought here years ago. And it was so encouraging to see these young people, really, really nice young people. And it'd be so hard to say to them, no, you can't have the same rights as everybody else. And I was very encouraged to see these young people, and lovely young people, I have to say, really, really nice. And they're sort of the young trans community is on the cutting edge at the moment.
I'm going to say something maybe that might be a little bit contentious now, which is I think the big, you would have met, not the same people, but people very like them, young people very like them, 20 years ago on a Pride Parade in Dublin or in Belfast or in any of those places. I think the phenomenal growth that we've seen in the Pride Parade in Dublin is not actually LGBT people. Okay, it's straight people who are coming along to support it, and on the one hand, that's very positive that straight people are coming along to support it. But I also think that there are people who are coming to it who don't even really know what they're supporting or something, who aren't very informed about it at all. And I've heard stories of people feeling like harassed by people who are, you know, coming along. Basically just seeing it as a free festival, just as something that you can go along to. And you know, there's an element, I remember 30 years ago in gay bars, which were pretty underground at the time in Dublin, you would have straight people who would come along as kind of tourists. I mean, they'd come to laugh at the queers, basically, is what it was, yeah? And I don't think that's entirely
gone.
No. Yeah. So, you know, I think I saw somebody, and I hate that I can't remember who, because I do like to acknowledge where stuff has come from. I did see somebody's piece of writing this morning on Twitter who was saying, you know, well, you know, maybe, you know, we don't have to have the biggest parade. You know, maybe it's okay to not have the biggest parade and not have some of this stuff that goes with it, you know?
Well, there has to be a balance in there somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. And there has to be some kind of education. And, you know, one of the things, when the parades were smaller, all of the stewarding was being done by volunteers from the community. I was involved in that, actually. I was involved in kind of training volunteers to do that. And we would used to try to be very sensitive, because one of the things that happens, you get a lot of... Taking part in your first Pride Parade is still a very big thing for a lot of young gay people who might be recently out, for example. It's not unheard of for them to get, you know, to sort of neck a bottle of vodka or something before they do it. You know, and you've got to try and look after those people and their safety, and you're bringing them out into the street. There are people who are hostile. There have always been, you know, homophobic assaults before and after the parade. That's always been something we've had to try and protect against. And back in the old days, during was not unheard of either, like bottles being lobbed into the parade. Bricks and stones, and I can remember a few nasty incidents over the years. So, you know, we would, and the same in Sligo years later, you were sort of training up people in the local community to deal with that, in the local LGBT community to deal with that, you know, kind of provide support for people, kind of watch out, see trouble before it happened, you know? And also just to speak, you know, quite gently, but in terms of people who were joining as supporters, if they were behaving in some way insensitively, that someone could approach them kind of nice and gently and say, look, you know, maybe you haven't really thought this out, but doing this today is a big deal for that person.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you could just give them a little bit more space or whatever it is that's required. So when you get onto the scale that Dublin Pride is on now, that isn't happening anymore. Basically, it's professional security companies who are doing all the stewarding. And there are all the difficulties that there are with private security companies.
And the difficulties you have with 60,000 people marching through Dublin City Centre.
Absolutely. Like, and who may not be aware that, you know, the person who's very drunk and falling all over the place. I mean, I have dealt many times at Pride events with people who are very drunk and falling all over the place. And to be honest, like, I'd put them in a taxi. Do you know what I mean? If you've got to move them on, I'd put them in a taxi, you know. I'd pay a taxi fare and find out where you need to go. Okay, if you've got a friend, is there a friend here somewhere? You know, do that kind of thing. Whereas your sort of commercial... security operative is used to operating in a different kind of way.
It's just
this person needs to be excluded, and they're not thinking about the fact that when you exclude that person, they're on their own, affected, obviously gay.
Potentially vulnerable.
And separated from all their friends, in an environment where there's a lot of alcohol and a lot of aggression. There's a change in approach.
Yeah. Can I ask another question, which goes back to the events in Dublin Castle?
Sure. That's the previous week.
Yeah.
There was an event which was the 25th anniversary of decriminalisation. That's what you're...
Absolutely. You attended the events.
I was at that too,
My
word.
No, I do hear.
Twice in the same month.
I heard they had to literally crowbar open the shore so you came up through the tunnels. They snuck you in. No. But it says a lot that we finally did this. We've apologized to the, and it really is.
The apology was very important, yeah.
Yeah, and it was very important. It's a pity that these are things that, you know, we look at now, we actually have to acknowledge our shame. We don't do it to enough in this country. We still have, we saw it recently, we honor the Magdalens, but we're still trying to fight to have this building not turned into another hotel.
Yeah.
From your perspective, did it mean something to you?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the Magdalens, because that was the obvious parallel for me. You know, I mean, the Magdalens got an apology, and it was very important, and meant a lot to a lot of them. And then the same neglect that had happened before continued.
Yes.
And, you know, a lot of them, they still haven't received their compensation. They haven't received medical care.
No. A lot of them passed away without.
A lot of them have passed away, and more of them will, sadly, before, you know, there's any kind of resolution to this. So, an apology can be just words, you know. Now, I mean, the harm to those women is in many cases more profound. Lots of them were institutionalized for years and years and years.
Mm.
Very hard, though, to quantify the harms to people of for a wrongful conviction in an Ireland that was extremely intolerant. You know, people emigrated. People lived their entire lives elsewhere.
Yes.
People felt they couldn't go back home, you know.
Mm.
So there are huge harms to people there as well. I think, you know, there's a whole debate that's going to happen now about pardoning, you know, exoneration. It'll be interesting to see what develops. But the moment of the apology is a positive moment. It's a significant moment. It means something to a lot of people. Most of them are older now. And, you know, a criminal record, for those who are still young enough to be in the workforce, you know, a criminal record does affect your employability. That record has kind of followed people through their lives. So I'm very glad to see an apology being made. I find it hard to judge the sincerity of the apology. I think you have to judge by actions.
Actions that follow.
Well, time will tell on this.
Time will tell. That was my feeling, yeah.
Izzy, going forward, and I hate the phrase, going forward.
Okay, let's go forward.
Anyway. What would you like to see with Pride in future years?
Okay, well, I mean, I think there's a whole conversation, a whole series of conversations that need to happen within the community about it. So I don't want to be too prescriptive. Having said that, I'm entitled to my personal opinion about it. I would like it to be a lot less corporatist. I think, you know, in the absence of huge public funding, and it is now a mass event, no matter what way you look at it, and that is overall a positive thing. In the absence of huge public funding, there has to be some corporate involvement, I suppose. I would be reluctant to offer them the prominence in the parade that they have. I think there are a lot of other smaller, equally important events that happen in the run-up to the parade that are much more community-based, that aren't attracting the same kind of tourist element. In my days in it, the balance that we struck was when we dealt with the corporate element, it would be a more straightforward transaction, as in we would produce a program and they could have advertising in the program.
They'd have the name on the brochure.
Yes, absolutely. Or, you know, they might get to sponsor a particular event, but it wouldn't be the parade. That was a hard line for us at the time, yeah. Or they might, there is still promotional opportunities there for them, and subsidizing things which are really important to the community. I think it's probably necessary to, pare back the corporate involvement in the parade. I think it's ridiculously cheap. I think what they,
I mean, every homepage of a major corporation has a CSR, corporate social responsibility section.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to find that and then throw in there that what you've done in terms of, inclusivity and acknowledgement of the LGBTQ community. And we can do all these things. And I genuinely think, yes, absolutely. I don't even know if it goes so far as it can't be involved.
Pride is a marketing opportunity.
Yes.
Pride is not a corporate social responsibility. You know, I mean, that's, if they want to do something socially responsible, I saw somebody on Twitter again, I can't remember who, I'm sorry, I've come straight from work and, you know, I work in residential care. So you grab a moment over a cup of tea now and then you see stuff, but you don't have time to make notes. But I did see somebody saying, somebody's proposal was that, the sponsorship of the parade should have to be matched by a donation to LGBT charities.
Mm.
Yeah. So that they could pitch that.
Yes.
That it went 50-50. And that might be reasonable. It wouldn't necessarily, I mean, it would benefit, obviously, the charities within the LGBTQI community, but it wouldn't necessarily reduce the corporate involvement in the parade because, you know, no matter what you charge them, you're not going to create a financial barrier
for them to come in. No, it doesn't. It makes
these massive multinational corporations, you know, if they consider it worth their while, they will pay.
You walked up St. Stephen's Green and there was a huge rainbow and in the corner it said KPMG.
Yeah.
That's okay. Right.
Yeah.
That is only a, these, and it makes sense for them, but you're spot on. It also makes, it's grand to put branding on something. Mm-hmm. It's better to do something that actually makes a difference.
I think there needs to be some restrictions about what they can do. I've also personally, I've had a bit of a bee in my bonnet about vehicles in the parade. Back since the very early days when it would be, you know, the two or three gay pubs would sort of chuck in a flatback truck full of drag queens. Do you know what I mean? But somebody has to stand behind that, like breathing in the exhaust fumes. And I think when you've got these massive numbers of people involved, like it's not beyond the bounds of possibility. They're very slow moving vehicles. It's not beyond the bounds of, possibility to do human propelled vehicles, as in vehicles that are based on, you know, bicycles or pushed.
The floats that we've seen. Yeah.
That organizations like Mocknus, for example, that some of the community arts people do. So you could do something much more visually impressive and not be belching fumes into the faces of the people walking behind.
And you need to do what Martin does and go right to the very front. You stand at the very front of the parade.
Yeah. Well, I guarantee you the very front row is the only place where you're not getting a face full of fumes. And you know, in very slow moving situations, like that really is a problem. I'm not exaggerating that. You do see people, and people are now placed relatively rigidly in the parade.
Yeah.
You do see people who are suffering from being behind some massive float that's traveling at, you know,
an airplane,
4 or 5 miles an hour. It's not nice. So, you know, I think there's all kinds of ways we could be more creative about it. I do think there have to be some guidelines put in. I do have ideas about what they should be, but it's too big a subject, and it's also a subject that needs to be thrashed out internally within the LGBT community.
And let's be positive about it.
I would like to see an effort to divert some more of the sponsorship into some of the more niche events that happen in the week or so prior to the parade.
There's a whole month.
I wouldn't have an objection to advertising in print materials to advertising on the website, you know, sort of click through advertising. I think there are ways of getting some of the corporate money in without handing them the parade. The parade is very important, you know. I'd just like to talk
pride
about
Pride is protest.
Yeah, Pride is about protest, of course, because there's always been stuff that we've had to protest about, but also Pride is about visibility, which is very important. So, you know, LGBT people, generally speaking, have grown up. There's been some change, and some people are now growing up in more supportive families. For people of my age, you know, none of us grew up in supportive families. Our families, they might have been very decent people. My own family were very decent people. They just had not been educated in any way to expect this. They didn't know how to deal with it. And there really wasn't any support there from families. There wasn't any support from the culture. I wrote a thing over 20 years ago about Pride that people still come to me and say that it had a resonance with them, which is something I'm very pleased about. But I talk about taking part in my first Pride event. And I said that Pride was... the thing about Pride was it was like walking through the fire, you know. It was being out in public, yeah. It was terrifying and exhilarating at the same time. And you do walk through the flames. What you're saying to the world is you brought us up to hate ourselves, and we don't.
Yes.
You know. And it's a very revolutionary thing. It's a very big thing in LGBT people's lives. You speak to any LGBT person about the first time they went on Pride, I guarantee you they can tell you what they were wearing. They can tell you who they were with that day. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They can tell you all about it because it is actually a major, major life experience, you know? So it is, it's a kind of a rite of passage. And it's very important as such to LGBT people. And yes, there's an element of protest because we've always had to protest. And I'm concerned about it getting so commodified that is not there for people anymore. Well, so we need to protect that. It needs to be very much about the community. I said on Saturday, and I meant it, that Pride is a promise also. I see Pride as a symbol of the fact that the LGBT community is still politicized and is able to be mobilized onto the street. And I see it as a promise that when the time comes to fight, we can fight. Yeah. We're organized. Yeah. You don't have to go into ancient history. You know, I mean, obviously if you go back to the Stonewall riots, that's 1969. The big issue was police harassment. So it hasn't gone away, still there, but perhaps on not such a pervasive institutional level. But it's, you know, these days all the police bands and the army bands and all that want to be in the parade. You know, for subsequent generations, there were different issues and very strongly for me, I was very strongly involved in the sort of late 80s, early 90s in HIV activism. And, you know, gay people literally in this country, you know, the state did nothing. People were literally left to die. The feeling about HIV at the time was that it was going to be limited to sort of working class drug users
and the gay community.
And gay people. Basically people that nobody cared about very much. And they really believed that it wasn't going to spread out of those communities. Yeah. So therefore, you know, you could just let it kind of burn itself out. It's like the kind of talk you have sometimes about prisoners, you know, people who commit, let's say, unpopular types of crime, and they say, oh, throw them all on an island, let them all kill each other. Like, that was basically the kind of narrative that there was around HIV. And the community had to, there's a lot of very moving art, movies, plays, novels from that period, because the community had to not only provide services, but protest very movingly and effectively, very effectively, and also had to look after each other on a personal level.
Took on the multinational corporations in pharma to get early access to the drugs and to get reasonable access to the drugs.
And it did happen, although the period before that is sort of hedonism. If you look at the culture of the gay community, you know, there's a period of protest in the late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah.
And by the late 70s and into the 80s, what you've got is this kind of club, drug-taking, hedonistic culture. And I think Pride was key to there still being the level of political organization there to be able to mobilize vast numbers of people, as happened in the late 80s and early 90s. So I think that's what I mean when I say that Pride is a promise. We're living in a time now the right is rising. We're very fortunate in this country. We're bucking the trend so far.
We're pushing back a little bit.
Or we're 5 years behind the trend
to
other times. Who knows? It would be nice to think it, but I'm cynical. But certainly in other countries, you're seeing a backlash against LGBT people, and it's from the right, and you're seeing a willingness on the left to abandon LGBT people and to blame LGBT people for the failures of liberalism in particular. Yeah, that somehow or other supporting our rights was a bridge too far. and turned off the ordinary people who are more important us not ordinary people. Do you know what I mean?
I do. I know exactly what you mean.
So that's a whole dynamic that goes on there. And we are seeing concerted attacks, particularly on transgender people, but on the LGBT community, you will see a lot of the funding is going to disappear. A lot of the corporate sponsorship, all of that is going to disappear. And it will be what it has always been, really, which is us fighting for ourselves. You know, that's the period that we're in. So I think Pride is, as well as a protest, a party, all of those things, Pride is also a promise, and it is a promise that if you mess with us, we will fight back.
Well, we were discussing this earlier, Izzy, and we were talking about 20, 25 years ago where there was lots of talk about the pink pound, but now there needs to be more than looking at the money from the corporate end. Look at the principles and get more involved in the smaller projects in what needs to be done there.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. You know, the talk 20, 25 years ago, certainly in this country, about the pink pound was a little bit premature, let's say, because, 25 years ago in this country, if you were out of the closet, you were probably unemployed. You know, so you didn't have any pink pound for anybody to be going after. And among the benefits of decriminalisation, and it's not to be sneezed at, because it does give a lot of ordinary people a little bit of dignity in their lives and employability and so on. So that is clearly important. There always was, there's always been a class division in the LGBT community, as there is in pretty much everything else. You know, so the it's interesting, people talk about, I'm sorry, we're probably running over time again.
That's not your fault. It's my fault.
Crucify me. People talk about the Stonewall riots as the birth of the LGBT movement, and it's not really correct. The Stonewall riots are the birth of the radical LGBT movement, because going back long before that, going back into the 50s, certainly, you have what were described as homophile organizations, which are basically civil rights oriented, more middle class dominated, assimilationist type of organizations. Yeah, they were there already. They were there long beforehand. They were gatekeeping, as those organizations still do to this day. And what wasn't being represented were the people who get beaten up in the street, or the people who don't have anywhere to live, or, and nobody ever will represent those people until we represent ourselves. And that's the lesson that's in the Stonewall riots.
Yeah.
And it's the lesson that was in ACT UP in the latter part of the 80s.
But I think, this is the first thing you said, that they taught us to hate ourselves.
And we don't. Yeah.
And I think, that sentence for me just reverberates through the whole thing. Because what it means is when you strip back the corporatization, you strip back the even the flamboyance and the outpouring, it means you can mobilize, you can radicalize, you can count on your allies, and you can pull people together, and you can say, no, because we are watching.
Well, the flamboyance is important too, because we have our culture.
I don't want to.
We have our own culture, and it's a culture that comes from having been kind of pushed down, being told, be smaller, take up less space, don't draw attention to yourself. Yeah. It's a huge conditioning for gay people, particularly, don't draw any notice on yourself. So it's actually a very revolutionary
thing. Would you not just be happy to watch Eurovision once a year and just be quiet? I know we're laughing, but there's a huge disconnect between that. But I think it's really important that you've summarized it in so far as we will, every hard fought victory, every little bit of social justice, every little bit of incremental human rights, that was all hard fought for.
It was all fought for, and if we're not prepared to fight for it again, we will lose it. Every bit of it.
Yeah.
Every bit of it.
Yeah.
And not just the LGBT community. We're living in an environment at the moment. This is neoliberalism as well. Mm. We're living in an environment at the moment where a roof over your head has been redefined as a luxury.
Mm.
That is the environment that we're living in. And anything that we don't fight for, we are poised to lose.
Well, thank you so much for coming in and talking to us, Izzy.
Do I get to knock you out now?
Nah.
Give it to him!
We might turn over a few tequilas, all right?
I'll hold his legs. You just pop him one, Izzy.
Thanks for having me in again, guys.
No. Delighted thanks for your time.
Always delighted to have you in, Izzy. And as they said, you are one of the founding members of what happened in this country and making it a better place for people in different communities to come together. You have made it a much better place for people.
I want to say two words in response to that.
Thank you. Thanks, folks. Thanks for listening. Talk to you all soon. Mind yourselves. Bye-bye.
Okay.